Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them at 4191A Manchester Avenue, right in the heart of the Grove, between the demo and the ready room. They have an all-new music happy hour coming up again this Friday. New records coming in from Joe Bonamassa, Mike Snow, Ray LaMontagne, Santa Gold, Deep Purple, Flogging Molly, Twisted, and M. Ward, and more. So get down there, check out what they have in store, all kinds of new vinyl, CD, and even tape. Check out their always growing local music selection from some of your favorites around town. And keep an eye out on Saturdays. They do a lot of in-store performances down there. So a lot going on over at Music Record Shop. Find more information at their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hi, I'm Mick.
And I'm Brian.
And we are
Wo Thunder.
And you're listening to
the Rock Paper Podcast on the internet.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock, 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 Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, everybody. Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from South City down on Cherokee.
Oh, yeah.
Hanging out with Brian and Mick of Wo Thunder, right?
Yes.
All right. Indeed. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
At my apartment.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for having me over to your lovely home here.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. This is, we kind of talked a bit off mic, but I tend to frequent this area when I'm doing various interviews with people because there are quite a few entertainers that live down in South City, Cherokee, Tower Grove, and
this area is full of entertaining people.
Yeah, hell yeah. But I was going to bring it up because I thought it was funny. I figured it was a good way to start the show. But I reached out a while back about setting this up, and we haven't met really, except for I did run into you at
the Hateful Eight.
Yeah, so like
you were there for
right
that. Yeah. The screening, the 70mm screening.
I wish I could have made it for that one.
Yeah.
I'm gonna watch that again. I didn't. That's not my favorite Tarantino film.
Sure.
And I'm a big Tarantino fan. It felt sort of like the use of the wide 70mm frame made the whole thing come off sort of like a staged play to me.
Mm-hmm.
And which it's an interesting turn for his career. I think it's interesting to see him do because his dialogue's always great and the actors are always great. But it was just kind of a weird... It's a weird entry into his canon. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What is your favorite?
Tarantino?
Do you happen to know, it's really hard to pick one.
I mean, because Pulp Fiction's so great, but it's like, I really enjoy what he's done the last few years. Django's amazing.
Yeah.
And I really liked Inglourious Basterds. Yeah. A lot of people didn't like that. I love Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, Inglourious Basterds was great.
So, I mean, I can tell you which ones I don't like as much, but there's like a couple. And I'm a huge fan, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah,
they're so versatile, really. I mean, he has a thing that, like, there's a style that ties them all together, but, like,
you recognize
they're so different one to another still.
All right.
It's weird that he can be so all over the place and still have this cohesive Tarantino thing that you can't quite pin down.
Sure.
Or maybe you can if you're a film critic.
Right.
That, for Hateful Eight, I thought it was cool the way they did it, like, with some of that, because, like, essentially, a majority of the film is shot in one room.
Yeah.
And instead of like having several camera cuts back and forth whenever somebody spoke, you know, they were able to kind of like
one wide frame.
And then, so I thought that was kind of an interesting take on.
That's why it gives you that stage play. Right. Look, it looks like you're watching a stage.
Yeah.
This is the part where we should say spoiler alert: it's shot on Super 8.
Yeah.
Super 8. Yeah. Super 8 times 9 point something.
What is it?
It's 70 millimeter.
No, 7 millimeter.
70.
70.
That's way more than 7 millimeters.
I have no idea.
But
I've actually never made a film before. I'm going to go ahead and confess that.
You should make more films in 7mm. It can be your thing.
Yeah. But I'm like you say, I'm a huge Tarantino fan. Mm-hmm. I've Pulp Fiction is a classic for me. I just love it so much. All the dialogue and everything about it. Just but yeah, Django again. You know, another a newer one, but still so funny in some of the parts. But such a great character is that he develops and all this stuff.
It was such a unique voice in cinema. Period. I mean, mm-hmm. everyone tried to rip him off from the 90s on. People aren't doing that as much anymore, but it's such a unique voice. Mm-hmm. If you can not notice all the copycats that came after, you know, kind of ignore a lot of those guys.
Yeah, well, I just thought it was funny. I'm walking in the theater and I think that's Brian. Like, so
most people will run into me at the movies. I'm a big movie guy. Yeah. I'm a huge movie buff. Yeah, we have movie nights here at my apartment, and I live by the bomb door on Cherokee Street, which is the bomb door is an event space, and we have a big backyard, and we set up this big, huge screen outside. There's a bonfire. We show movies throughout the summer. It's a great time. You should come sometime this summer.
All right.
Now that we know each other. But yeah, we have a lot of fun.
I should come sometime, too.
You never come.
You're always
the only band member that comes to my stuff is Joe. He's the only one. Joe Taylor. Awesome guy.
Shout out to Joe Taylor.
He's super talented.
Yeah.
And he shows up for my movie night, so.
So about the band, I don't know, I just started seeing the name around a lot more. And I've been kind of diving headfirst into this local music scene here. And, I've said it in the past, I felt like I had a fair grasp of what St. Louis music was a couple years ago. And I started writing album review kind of stuff for a little bit. I did a little blog thing, and then kind of got burned out writing, and I figured I became more of a fan of podcasting, and I was like, hey, it just sounded like fun. I was like, so I'm going to start doing that. And I had all these friends I made over the years in music and started talking about that. So like I said, I kind of felt like I knew a lot about it, but then like this year I've networked out so far, meeting all sorts of different bands from all over the city, and like realized like I didn't really know much of anything about St. Louis as a whole, but I feel a lot more educated now. But
there's a few scenes going on. It's
the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Like the more you learn about the underground music scene, the more you realize like there's so much stuff that you haven't ever heard of. There's always something new. Like, it seems like there's a new project starting up every day.
All these shows going on in basements.
Yeah.
You're just killer and amazing and weird, fantastic art that you don't even know is happening, you know. And you see more of it now because of the internet. Because you see photos posted of it. You go, what is this thing that's happening that I didn't know about?
I grew up in the DIY scene. That's my background. That's what informs everything that I do at Foam. And that's it's been interesting watching the DIY scene evolve with the internet and social media, and the networking capabilities are pretty awesome right now, and it's really a game changer for labels and the whole touring thing and show swapping and all that. It's really awesome for DIY musicians right now, I think.
We had a really fun art. We did our first tour this last year was up through Ohio and up to Chicago. And it was mostly a DIY situation. Well, Chicago was anyway. Mm-hmm. And those are...
It's essentially the only way I know how to operate.
Yeah. It's these packed... The best shows I've ever played in Chicago have been house party shows or like DIY venue shows.
Right.
I only played Chicago like 9 times so far in my life. And of all those times, 3 were DIY shows and the rest were like venues. And man, those house parties have been like the best shows no matter what.
And then the after show experience is always
the after show
usually
experience
pretty great, if not
is amazing.
Simply interesting.
We had this psychotic at this. We were crashing at this house party we played in Chicago, and me and my then fiance were like, and everyone else was sort of like crashing. And Mick and Dan, our guitar player, were hanging out on the bonfire in the backyard of this house party. It's going on pretty late, and there's this psychotic dude that lives upstairs in this house. That like showed up at this party.
So he's like, he's the neighbor essentially. He doesn't live in the same house, but he lives above the house where we were playing. So they share a backyard and, you know, some common space. And so he felt pretty comfortable taking up a lot of space in the room and in the backyard. And, like, turns out he's kind of a psychotic, aggressive drunk who, like, was just seemed like he was trying to pick a fight with everybody and, like, the type of guy who you don't want to really get in a fight with. That's the really short story.
Yeah, also mixing, like, I think every time he would go away, he'd come back very aggressive, I heard.
Right, so like, he was in the basement. He'd go away
and chemically, you know, bolster himself again and come back and just start shit.
I'm 100% sure that he was on some kind of uppers and getting just blasted, drinking way too much.
Right, so Mick comes back in. I'm like, I'm falling asleep in there with my girlfriend. And Mick comes in and he's, like, freaking out, telling me the story about how this guy's being aggressive and starting, like, and scaring everybody down there, because... Well, first of all, let's
it
go back.
It was serious. Like, he was turning into a serious bully in the backyard to a point where I felt like somebody needed to stand up. Like, we needed a community response to handle this guy. But it's awkward because he lives upstairs.
Yeah.
And so, technically, he, like, it's sort of his property and his turf. And there's all these people here for the show. And he's allowing it to happen. So, he kind of was socially taking up a lot of space. Or I should say antisocially. Being a bully and, like, just standing up and being, like, physically aggressive and, like, kind of punching people sort of quotey fingers playfully, but really hard and, like, they weren't into it.
Right. Like, so, like, when I met this guy, the first thing he said to me was, hey, let's go up to my apartment, I'm going to murder you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he had said that to everybody else, too, and everyone was like,
That's a good opening line.
It's a weird way to say something. Like,
he first said it to Saria, right?
Yeah.
And she was like, man, that's not a very good way to get me to come up to your apartment for whatever reason. She's like, no way.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know, dude was just twisted.
Yeah.
And
but it's, long story short, so yeah, you have interesting stories when you're out of town.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm glad we have that experience.
Sure.
It's an interesting story.
And there's a lot more to that. We'll talk about it later.
And this is the guy who was in the basement at the show, like, while we were playing, and he was seeming to be into it and in the front row. But can we curse on here?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
so after, like, a song that he liked, he was like, fuck you guys, was, like, the way he was complimenting us.
Yeah.
It was just, like...
His way to show...
like, he was mad about how, like, much he liked it or something.
You fucking assholes!
Yeah, like, anger was his response to seemingly everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you?
Long story short, too, is, like, Mick came in after he explained this whole thing to me, and, like, was trying to explain to me that there's bad stuff going down. Like, me and my girlfriend, like, ended up leaving town, and we, like, slept in my car on Lake Michigan and just, like, watched the sunrise and everything. And nobody died, though.
Nobody died, but there was some community intervention.
Mick's a hero.
Was necessary.
He's a savior. Yeah.
I went inside. I wanted to, like, arm myself with something because... I don't know. It was weird.
I was
drinking a bottle of wine. I had the whole bottle, and like, I finished the bottle. I didn't drink a whole bottle by myself, but, like, I was polishing off the tail end of a bottle of wine, and I held on to it because I was like, this guy is so physically aggressive and intimidating and being such a bully that I want to have a weapon if he tries something. And I'm not a fighter, but, like, I can handle myself, and I'm, like, just thinking ahead. So I'm holding the bottle after it's empty. He's like, you finished that wine, didn't you? I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I did. He's like, why are you still holding it? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Why are you asking me that question? You know, like, he was very aware.
Yeah.
But...
And he also had a knife, too.
Yeah, he had a knife. There was a knife outside. And when he went inside, I said to my bandmate, hey, hide that knife. This guy's scary and aggressive. Guy comes out. The first thing he says is, where's that knife? And Dan was like, oh, you know, it's over here. And he's like, give it to me. And Dan's like, why? And he's like, what do you mean, why? Just fucking give it to me. And Dan panicked and gave it to him because he was intimidated. And I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
At that point, I was like, I'm out of here. I'm not dealing with this. Like, right. You just armed this insane guy. Like,
so Mick comes in and he's freaking out. What he finds as a weapon, though, are these two wooden...
Rubber band guns
that say Branson, Missouri on them. He's, like, swinging them around like he's a ninja. And, like, a ninja with wooden Branson guns. And
so
I have a couple photos of that. It was a good time.
Like, my thinking, though, was, like, I would hesitate to stab somebody or, you know, shoot somebody. And I don't want to come out with anything that looks like a weapon because it's challenging, and I was definitely just trying to defuse the situation. So I have these rubber band guns, but I was like, the butt of this gun, I could still pistol whip the dude if I needed to. So that was my thinking with the thing.
And at that point, I decided to leave. So.
Yeah. That's where we lost Brian.
You could pop him in the head with the rubber band, and then
I wasn't even going to fuck with the rubber band. I was just, I flipped the thing, and right. I was ready to just knock him in the skull if he needed it. Yeah.
Mix the guardian on the road. He takes care of everybody. Yeah. Make sure nobody gets fucked with.
Are you going back to Chicago then?
There's nothing. It's not set up yet. I'm in the middle of setting up one with another trade with another Chicago band. Actually, I got to talk to you about that. But yeah,
we're certainly into it. There's nothing on the books right now.
Yeah. Right now, we're just trying to get. We recorded our first song as this lineup and are putting out a flexi disc single for our shows, The Dressy Bessie, in March. So that's what we've been working on recently.
It's pretty exciting to have a recording that we all played on and that we helped compose. It was it was a really collaborative composition. And
up to this point, the only recordings we had was the LP, the record I made. The Wolf Thunder record that's out, basically, it was a record I made in my kitchen and my dining room when I lived in Maplewood over a 4-year period. And the band was me at the time and my wife at the time and a friend of ours. And basically, they did some vocals for it, but everything else on that record is me. So it's interesting and it's fun to me to make a record with this lineup, which I lucked into is fantastic. It's so good. And everybody that comes into this band is coming from, they're all all stars in town. They're great. And having all their input on this record has been a real treat. It was exciting.
It is a veritable super group of musicians that have played in other sort of notorious local bands around town. Saria's and Pat Sajak Assassins
and Sinusopro
has her own prolific solo project, Sinusopro. Joe Taylor is in Kid Scientist. He fronts Kid Scientist and writes most or all the songs, as far as I know. Dan and I have been in a lot of things. Nay and The Floating City and Humdrum most recently, and then Brian was in Middle Class Fashion and Tight Pants Syndrome and Max Tone 4 if you're
so many
been
bands.
Around long enough to remember that
if you're old enough to remember those things.
Yeah, Brian and I had a realization several months ago that we actually shared a bill together more than 10 years ago
at Mississippi Nights.
Nice. It was in the Max Tone 4 and I was in The Floating City.
And I remember you guys were great.
It was funny. The first time I met Brian, I thought that I had he looked familiar to me, and I was like, "Oh, he looks like Daniel Faraday. That's why."
Oh yeah.
But it was actually yeah, you can't see it on the radio, but Brian looks like Daniel Faraday
from Lost.
From Lost.
I kind of got a Jim Carrey thing from I don't know if you hear that one at all, but that's kind of
for me.
I think Brian's a lot more attractive than Jim Carrey.
When I didn't have a beard, I heard that before. I'm a little rubber faced. I'm a very expressive, and I'm very excitable, and I have a lot of energy, so I can see that maybe a little bit. But I've been my entire life, depending on what weight I was and whatever, I've been told I look like. When I was a kid, I was a lot heavier, and I was told I looked like Jay Leno. I have a big jaw, you know what I mean? And kind of Bruce Campbell jaw. And you don't see it as much because I'm camouflaging with this beard.
Right.
But ever since I was a kid, people always were telling me about people I look like.
Sure.
But now it's this guy from Lost for the last, which is the most similar, I think. It's not a bad comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty
and nice. Incidentally, you were dressed like him the day that I met you, wearing a tie and a button down.
Yeah. I like to dress.
Which helped.
It's kind of fun doing enough of these now, where I've had similar stories like that, where bands, guys realize, years later they're playing in the same band or, and are friendly and stuff or whatever it is, but they realize, we get to talking and they're like, oh man, I was on that show or I went to that show as a fan. That kind of stuff. It's kind of crazy how we all, run in different circles, but we all kind of come together through music and stuff. Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Especially St. Louis. It's a small town.
It's a
big
world.
City, but it's a small town, man. Yeah. Everybody knows everybody.
Sure.
And the music scene is, I don't know, it's fairly tight-knit. There are different scenes, but it's like, I know so many people from playing music in this town. It's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I I just wrote something on Facebook the other day of it, just like how thankful I am for the people that music has brought into my life, because like it's just, you know, I've so many great friends right now, like that, you know, the people I've met just in the last year that are, you know, a big part of my life, and it's really exciting that I, you know, been able to meet these people and develop these friendships and stuff, and yeah, it's all through music, you know, whether being a fan or, you know, and discovering stuff through the show and stuff too, but I'm having a great time doing it. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. That's pretty much charted the course of my life.
Yeah.
Since I played in the first band I played in 8th grade to this point.
What was your first band called?
It had several names, as they do. We formed as a cover... Well, okay, there was a talent show when I was in 8th grade at the Christian school. And we got together to play the talent show, and we were like the only group that was playing real instruments. We decided to do a cover of Nirvana's Come As You Are.
So you didn't play Christian
or... So everybody else was doing contemporary Christian tunes and lip syncing and dancing, and we were like, you know, rebels or whatever doing this.
Fucking minds.
Like, yeah, it was really fun, and that kind of opened up... That's where it all started for me, and then started a band with Dan Meehan when I was a junior and he was a senior in high school.
And they're still playing together.
And we've been playing together since then in a handful of bands.
Yeah. Very cool.
All of the aforementioned ones. Yeah, it seems like a duo. I want Dan in every band that I play in from
on. We were looking for guitar player. That's what, you know, as soon as Nick said, yeah, I'd love Dan to be here. He's awesome. Yeah. He can play anything. And Dan, he just had a baby. So basically we kind of waited out to see when it was a good time for Dan to play, to, you know, be out away from the home.
And incredibly, he's able to play in a band right now, even with a newborn at home, because he's that dedicated to rock and roll.
Sure. And thankfully, his wife is allowing.
Yeah.
Because I know it's I've had two kids, so it's like, I understand.
They probably would have never met had it not been for the Floating City, so she
there
has
you
to
go.
Respect that's a part of who he is.
Okay.
Well, she doesn't have to, but she does, fortunately. Thank you, Lottie, if you're listening to this, you rad.
Yeah, but he's great. He's super talented. I just tracked the guitar for the new song with him, and he's great.
So the album that on the Bandcamp and Spotify and all that you did pretty much all by yourself.
Basically, like a one man band deal. Yeah. Plus, like the live drums were played with a guy I played with in Ty Pinson room, Scott Hermes, and I had like some slight a couple of guys played like percussion on it with me, and then the two girls that were like in the band, quote unquote, sang some vocals on it. Mm-hmm. But like all the songs are written by me, and I played all the instruments and stuff like that.
What is the so the new lineup and the stuff you were talking about tracking and stuff, like is it a similar type of vibe, or
it's totally different?
Totally
this
different.
Is a band. Yeah, right. It's like it's still like I wrote the song that we were releasing now, but I wanted to make sure we went through the process of like I didn't just say, hey guys, here's the song, it's done, here's the parts. Play the parts. It was like I brought it in and like let's develop it together. Mm-hmm. Actually, this one actually came together really organically in practice.
It did, yeah. Because
this one actually came up with just a riff that I started playing, and then you joined in.
I think
and
I just
Dan
started drumming on it.
Yeah,
yeah.
So this actually organically was brought in.
I don't know 100% which point did you write the lyrics.
Lyrics were the last thing to come into it. Really.
Yeah. So you had a melody that you were tinkering
with.
Yeah,
I just sang along in practice.
You just threw it out there, and then it became a song that way.
So that's like a totally different vibe for me. Like. Writing a song from scratch in my dining room by myself at 3 a.m. because I was working midnight shift for like a zillion years, so when I was on my off nights I would record that record, so everything I recorded basically was between like midnight and 5 a.m. and it's a fun creative way to do it, because I didn't know I'd release that record or anyone would actually hear it, so that's like total freedom, and I didn't have that anywhere else in other bands I'd been in, so I feel like that's awesome. I'm really glad I had that experience. It's the first record I ever made where it was exactly what I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really rewarding in a totally different way to have like a band of people that you really respect and you're excited about being in a band with.
It's interesting to record a record without having a band yet. Like,
oh yeah, it's. It was,
I guess but, I guess people do that.
Oh yeah, for sure, lots of people do.
I didn't hear Woe Thunder because of the record. Like I'd heard the name thrown around a few times. I think some music critics picked up on the record before, like I don't think you ever. I don't know if you ever played a proper CD release.
We had an 11. We had a few different reviews before we ever played a show.
Yeah. Right. So my intro to Blood Thunder was when Brian played an open mic at Foam. With the
first live lineup of the band, which it was me and my daughter and her boyfriend at the time. He was playing drums,
right?
And there
was no drummer.
He showed up.
What? Oh,
remember?
Is that who showed up and sat down?
It was John.
Okay, so
he was out with his friends.
No drummer for a while, and I'm behind the bar. I was working the open mic that night, and I play the drums, and there was a kit set up, and I felt this strong urge to jump on there and play the kit, but I didn't want to step on his feet because, I figured if they wanted a drummer, they'd have one.
Right.
And then as soon as I, worked up the gumption to go ask Brian if he wanted me to sit in on a track, somebody else, just as I was on my way to the stage, somebody else jumped on stage and started playing with them. I was like, dope!
Which is our drummer at the time, yeah.
But that's... After seeing that and having that urge to play with him... because I dug the songs and I heard this. I like to think of my approach to drumming is to fill in spaces, and I heard the spaces I wanted to play in, and I dug what he was doing. And so when he asked me to play drums, I didn't really have to think about it too much. It's like, yeah, I was already I had the same thought before you asked. So
yeah, very cool.
I didn't hesitate.
Yeah, basically what I did when I started playing it live, I just did it as a one man band with a laptop, and then I added on a drummer and a couple of vocalists, but we still were really reliant on that laptop to have backing tracks and to have either bass. We didn't have a bass player, or just so much samples that I'd created in the studio, in my dining room studio. But the great thing about this lineup here is that everyone is at a level of musicianship where we could drop the laptop, and we still have Joe Taylor on keyboards. He triggers some samples with a sample pad. But it's such a small part of the show now, which is so great.
Yeah.
Because I had so many bad experiences trying to rely. When your show is reliant upon a laptop, if that laptop's not.
It seems straightforward, but there are so many little things that can go wrong.
Right.
I just had a lot of bad experiences. So it's I was delighted to leave that behind and move to just having a sampler pad with a live band that
sure.
gives killer musicians. And
it really is a good cast of people, and it's
a
great,
for sure.
Personally, it's a great crew to work with.
Yeah.
The social end of things is really great too.
What do you how do you guys classify yourself? What would you? Because I was listening to that the recordings that you have there, and I get some 80s pop new wave kind of stuff in there.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a new wave influence keyboard wise and stuff in there. I'd say. It's kind of I call it indie pop, or people have called it indie rock, but it is rock.
I call it indie synth pop.
There you go. That sounds great. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's hard to categorize stuff.
Sure.
First time I heard Woe Thunder live, the first thing that came to mind was A.C. Newman.
Oh, right on,
He's one of the three songwriters in the New Pornographers.
Yeah.
I would say that he was probably the sugariest, poppiest element of that band. Mm-hmm.
He's a high kind of
similar
voice,
register
is,
and a similar songwriting style with where the melody is very much central to the song.
What I like to do is, I'm all about melody and not about the jam. I don't really jam, and I don't understand songs that go on for 7 minutes or longer.
Fortunately, nobody in this band has the propensity to jam.
This is great. Nobody really is saying, "Hey, guys.
Nobody
Let's take this for
wants,
a walk."
Yeah,
nobody's
nobody
doing
wants
that,
to do
which
that.
Is great. Everyone's interested in a song and the little journey of the song,
structure
and making it as awesome as it can be without anyone having to show off their chops, because everybody has chops.
Right.
But it's nobody's wanking.
We're all over 30. We've been playing music for a while, and it feels like nobody in this band is trying to prove that they're the best drummer or bassist or keyboardist or singer in the world. It's what we do is to serve the song, and there's a level of taste and musicianship with the folks that we're working with that it's really refreshing for me to participate in. It's a really great cast that Brian has assembled.
Sure.
Took a while.
So were you recording now. I mean, how, do you have quite a few written? Or
Right now, basically, we have just we're releasing a flexi disc, like this old flexi disc records you get in magazines. You know, right? That's like this new thing now. Bruiser Queen, our pals, just released one, and Dropkick the Robot did, and I was like, this is a great way to make an inexpensive record. And so basically what we're doing is we're releasing this brand new song that's the group effort, and the B-side of the record is an unreleased track from the LP that I made called The President's Book of Secrets, which is a ridiculous song that I love. It's a lot of energy, it's fun. But so we're doing that, so it's kind of like old and new on the same record, but my main goal right now is just to focus on this first song together went so well. I just want to make sure that we focus on plopping into like a full length record now and making a bunch of songs. I mean, I have a zillion three quarter finished songs. I'm trying not to finish songs at this point because when I finish them, I tend to start demoing them. And when I start demoing them, I start writing parts. And then I feel like it's hard to allow them to let the band make the parts, you know what I mean? So like I'm getting songs to the point where I can bring them to the band and let them make them the band song, as opposed to me trying to.
I think
to
you have
parts.
Such a natural sensibility about song structure and melody that you could bring something in that's like one of the rawest things you've ever written, and it's still going to be really accessible and, you know, make sense. And I think we can kind of fuck it up a little bit and you know, give it a little bit of edge to chase the
exactly
sweet. And I think that's what's working for us.
My immediate natural, if I have a talent, it's for like a pop melody.
Definitely.
And it's like more of like a 60s rooted pop melody sense, which can be almost the sugary side of like the Archies, like really straight up pop melodies. And that's what's so great about like.
That's what kind of drew me into it, because I appreciate listening to that, but that's not something I do as a drummer or, you know, whatever. I know Dan's really into that kind of stuff too.
But like, I bring something to you, and like Mick will like take it on the drums and rhythmically in a totally different direction, and it's like, and it's always like, that's awesome. It's like I never would have thought of that. And that makes it have a totally different vibe, and it doesn't make it feel like, I don't know, it just gives it some depth and some, and sometimes it'll send it in a different direction. Like this song we just did together was originally a little bit more of a lighter song, like subject matter and just overall. And then once they brought in all their elements, it took on like a much different tone and like thematically changed, and it like became something, which is like a really great positive group effort, I think.
As a fan, I love that kind of stuff, like the evolution of a song, you know, the fact that you know, you might cut a demo of it and it's one way, but then like as when you finally get to putting it on the record, it might totally have a different feel to it. But I love you know, hearing some of those, you know, B-sides or whatever, you know, various forms of the song before you finally got to where you all agreed that this is the final product and stuff. But it's kind of, or even you know, a lot of I follow a lot of singer songwriters and stuff, so like taking it from just them playing it out on an acoustic by themselves to making it a full band and stuff, and like it's you know, it's just fun for me. I enjoy that the process.
It's fun to watch the song, the evolution of a song for sure. I'm just finally actually excited about doing open mics a little bit now that I'm starting to like develop songs in a more bare bones way, as because I used to like, I would, whenever I'd make a song, I would demo it, and I would like, I'd basically finish the song, like I would.
But then you show up to the open mic feeling like you have to do everything.
So then it doesn't feel like when I just play with the guitar by myself that it feels like it just feels like it's a bad version of what I already did.
The way I think about it is like if the song stands up in a like really raw form, like say just Brian and acoustic guitar, it's a good song.
Right.
And that's a good starting point for like the band to do what they do. So seeing you at the Foam Open Mic in more of a raw setting made me want to jump in and do what I do, and then you know, add the various players to the mix.
For sure.
Yeah. So 2016, we'll have that flexi disc coming out, but then I mean, not to put deadlines on anything, but are we hoping for a full length by the end of the year?
I think it's...
It's a good goal.
Yeah, the problem with this band is, and really it's the only problem we have, is that because everybody in the band is from other projects and has their own thing going on, it's just hard to get everybody scheduled on, yeah, you know, together to actually be creative together. And I really don't want to bring in finished songs and assign parts. No. I really want us to develop like we did this one song. But it took us a few months to get that one song going. So like we're going to try to dig in. Saria's like... she has a label deal and she's releasing a record, she's submitting it right now, so she's like at the tail end of this, you know, finishing that record, so she's really busy, and Joe is finishing a record that's been going on for a while for Kid Scientist, so it's like trying to get them to, they gotta get their stuff out of the way first.
Sure.
So the goal is to hopefully have something full length out. Yeah, it'll happen this year for sure. Mm-hmm. And just more out of town stuff and getting like trading shows and stuff.
Right.
I think it's a good idea like to do what we're doing right now, playing a lot of shows and becoming solid as a band and knowing how to communicate with each other musically and, you know, just personally getting tight like that,
yeah,
before we start writing and...
Yeah, like that first road trip we took was an amazing tightener. We're going out and playing like, yeah, six shows, and the first trip we took, it was only three days of shows. We played...
Five shows?
We played five shows in 3 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right. So just those five shows in 3 days, and we were a little bit loosey-goosey in that period before then. And then after that, I was like, that's all you need. You need to just play a bunch of shows and a bunch of different audiences.
Right.
And we come back, and we're like, boom, everything's working.
Yeah.
Everything's firing and all
sorts of
things.
Felt like you're saying at that point.
Are you all in, like, one van, or
This time we didn't have a van, so we had to travel in two different cars.
Yeah.
But Saria just bought a van.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about all traveling together.
Yeah,
that's one.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing like going together on a trip.
That's one of my favorite things about being on the road, is, like, being in a car with, you know, with good friends, hanging out with like-minded people, and
sure,
just kind of having that time to shoot the shit. And, you know,
you get to know your band members a lot more on those,
yeah,
trips.
Podcasts,
yeah,
and have, you know, conversations, and the kind of conversations that happen when you're on the road are like, it takes like stepping away from regular everyday life and responsibilities to like get into a place where you want to have these conversations like that you wouldn't otherwise have. Personally speaking, when I'm on the road, I'm like more, I just feel more aware, and like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience when you're touring with a band and you have like really real conversation with, you know, various members of the band.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's something that Dan and I do a lot.
Usually it has to do with being in a rolling box for like 5 hours
at
a time.
Something about the movement.
Yeah. Well, it's just that you're stuck
by
with this person that you do things with them normally, but you're not in a box with them for like that many hours, where it's like you just start talking about stuff. And like,
sure,
Saria and I and Joe traveled most of that last trip, and we bonded so much on that trip and learned so much about each other. And I wish we'd all been together on that, because I know you and Dan.
Yeah, Dan and I did the same thing, but I'm looking forward to us all being in the same vehicle,
sure,
so we can all, you know, do that together.
Right. So yeah, I mean that's the goal this year, is to really put a record out, a real record, a full length, and just get back out of town more and tighten up what we got.
Yeah, very cool. I figure let's get some of these dates going here.
Sure.
So you can see Woe Thunder, February 5th at Off Broadway with Brothers Lazaroff
and the Foglights.
Yeah.
That'll be an interesting show. That's like, instead of doing three different sets, we're doing a combined, like, 2.5 hour program or 2 hour program where we're all, like, every piece of equipment's on stage, and everyone's sort of playing on each other's songs, and it's like this big kind of collaborative group effort. And it should be very interesting. It should be lots of fun. I'm excited about it. Those are great guys, the Foglights and the Brothers Lazaroff guys.
Yeah.
So it should be a good time.
And
come out to that show,
yeah,
you know?
And then also March 5th, you'll be back at Off Broadway.
Yeah, we're doing a few dates with Dressy Bessie from Colorado, old friends of mine. We're doing like Lawrence Date, and then we're in St. Louis, rather, on the 5th at Off Broadway of March. and possibly doing more than that. I'm not sure yet, but
okay.
Yeah, that they're. Have you seen Dressy Bessie at all?
No, I'm much.
They're like twee pop from like they're like '90s twee pop basically, and from that side Elephant Six, I guess side offshoot from that collective, and they're so much fun. Oh my god, they're the best. I love those guys.
Yeah, check it out.
Did you say they share a guitarist with?
Yeah, John Hill in Dressy Bessie is the guitarist from Apples and Stereo. And John Hill and his wife Tammy Elam are basically Dressy Bessie. Tammy Elam is the singer-songwriter. She basically Dressy Bessie is her, and he's her guitar player basically. But yeah, they're super fun.
Yeah,
they're great stuff.
Another thing I wanted to bring up was one of the also helped introduce me to you was friends Driving Wheel.
Yeah,
they've been on the show and I've become good buddies with.
Yeah, I made a video for them, which is yeah.
Yeah, so they the 30 miles to Houston or from Houston right. is just an awesome song, but great, really great video that.
Thanks.
and I was talking to Jeremy. He's been like said this. Jeremy's been on the show twice. I did one with just Jeremy when he was coming through town one time. But then I just recently went to Columbia and I sat with. The rest of the band, Craig and Ryan and Jeremy, and they were opening for Devin Allman at Rose Music Hall,
right.
And I recorded with Devin, and then I had a little bit of time to also record with Driving Wheel. They were like, "Hey, let's do it," because I was there anyway, and so we knocked it out, and it was actually a lot of fun. But their video is killer, man, and like I don't know if it was all you or if you have people that.
That was, I mean, I had a couple people like as production assistant types, like. I have the best PAs because my PAs are like super cool people. Like one of my PAs was Jason Potter, the drummer from Bruiser Queen,
yeah,
which is like
sure.
a badass band.
Yeah,
he's one of my baby buddies. He's awesome.
I recorded with Bruiser Queen, Jason and Morgan over at Steve's Hot Dogs.
Right on, yeah, because Mo works there. Right on. Yeah.
It was right before their album preview over at TikTok when the Sweet Static was coming out.
Right on. They're super. They're the main reason I actually moved down to Cherokee, 3 years ago because I love those guys and we were hanging out here a lot and
yeah.
It just seemed like a scene I wanted to get into at the time.
Sure.
Yeah, I make videos a lot. So yeah, that was like the second band that paid me a good amount of money to make a video was Driving Wheel. So I owe them quite a bit.
Yeah.
Very nice to me. But that was like this production where we shot like. 6 different locations over like 3 months, and it was quite an interesting feat because we could never get the same 3 band members in the room at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was a challenge, but I really like how the video came out. It was super fun.
Yeah, no, it's
a cool song.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that's you know kind of we talk some nice blues and rock influence, and that's right where that's like you know stuff I really love. So
he's a sweet guitar player.
Oh yeah, Ryan. I've been watching Ryan for you know a few years when he was with Shaman's Harvest.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And stuff, but yeah, he's a super talented guy.
How many bands have you shot video for?
I made like 27 or like maybe close to 30 in like the last 2-3 years.
Wow.
I just started making videos like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah,
and I was in a video when I was like getting into school when I was in my early 20s. But back then, video was like so frustrating because it was way before DSLR cameras. Made like depth of field video look interesting and all that stuff. Like, it was like old video, which unless you like could shoot it on film back then, which was so expensive, videos didn't look very cool. It was really hard to make something look good.
Yeah.
And like when DSLR started coming out, and the great lenses that and everything's so cheap. Like my DSLR is maybe a $700 camera, which is crazy cheap. And my favorite lens that I use for almost everything is maybe like a $700 lens, which is also. Crazy cheap for
relatively speaking.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
For like, it's a red. I mean, the industry standard on the low end is like the red camera, which is like $25,000 camera
yeah.
at least. I mean, these are people put some money in that equipment, but you're able to with an investment of like maybe $1,000 nowadays, you can make videos. Like
sure.
Bruiser Queen, the first video I really made was they're in their in your room video, which we made in the next door building right there,
okay.
actually in Morgan's bedroom. And that I had that one camera with like the lens that came with it. So I mean, with
yeah.
the maybe $700 investment, I was able to make that video, and it was super fun. And that opened a lot of doors and gave me a lot of work. You
yeah.
know?
I mean, I just had a conversation with a buddy the other night because they're talking about wanting to get to that step to where make a nice video mm-hmm. just to start, you know. But he was kind of making a joke, like, you know, if they were still in high school or whatever, they could just go, you know, get their buddies, like, do some skating videos or, you know, kind of stuff like that. They, you know, that kind of stuff to put in their video. But they're, you know, they're 30, 40-year-old guys and, like, right. you know, what are we going to put in our video kind of thing. And I showed them, like, you know, just kind of give them an idea of reference. But, like, I'm a fan of this band Vintage Trouble. And
I've heard of them, but I haven't heard them, actually.
They're really fantastic. Yeah. But they shot an entire video on the iPhone 4 a couple years ago. And you know, you can obviously tell it's not, like, really great. Yeah. But, like, it just the fact that that's an option, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I've seen lots of really fun videos that were shot on, like, the lowest possible format. That's great. Yeah. All it takes is some slight creativity and sure. some imagination. And, like, anybody can make a video nowadays. I'm excited that I'm able to actually make videos and I get paid for it for the most part. Mm-hmm. I still do stuff for, like, you know, I'm doing a video for my friend Nate Jones, who has a band called Cracked Ceilings. And he's also an incredible illustrator. So it's like I'm trading him illustrator work for making this video for him.
Cool.
So it's that kind of stuff. We do trades and stuff because that's this whole scene down there does that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I'm lucky that people actually will pay me to do video work because nowadays, like, everybody and their brother has video equipment and, like, can edit video. Uh-huh. And not necessarily do it well or do it in an interesting way, sure. but it's available nowadays to everybody pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that, though. I like that everybody has a chance to make art because people that wouldn't normally do that can all of a sudden realize they have some talent for it, you know, making stuff on their iPhone.
Yeah.
Which is because, yeah.
The other end of the spectrum is that people think that they can do everything.
That's true. You have a lot of people that think they're making great art that aren't. Yes, of course.
Yeah. We sort of talked off mic too, mentioned Talk, and yeah. I love what they're doing with their videos.
Oh, Talk is, I love Talk so much. I was just talking to them. We just played a show in Festus, Missouri.
We're talking to Talk.
We're Talk Lives, yeah. We're just talking to Talk. And those guys have such a great spirit and sense of humor that
yeah.
I like their music also a lot. But what really
it's hard to separate it though.
It's all part of the same, yeah. But like that personality and that viewpoint they have just makes them soar above so many in the community. That's just like
what Brian's so tall.
Because he's so tall and he has the hair. No, you know what I mean. It's just like that sense of humor and the way they are able to do that online in such a consistent way.
Yeah,
I don't know anyone else who does that at all in St. Louis that yeah. can use humor to market themselves.
There's a serious lack of pretense about what they do. That's really refreshing.
Yeah,
I think they definitely,
which is a pretty pretentious thing to say about Talk as it's coming out of my mouth.
Yeah,
I think they've definitely, you know. Honed in on the Peeps music videos. Like, I don't think there's anybody
Peeps
else.
Music videos.
Yeah, they've cornered that market.
Yeah,
they did a great job.
They should be getting paid by Peeps at this point.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Talk, though, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, we, they're, you know, and then kind of going to what I was saying earlier is, like, they're guys that I just met recently, you know, and then kind of come along into kind of discovering a lot of the more of that kind of garage rock sound that we, a lot of, there was, you know, quite a few bands that kind of similar vein of what they're doing, but yeah, I, you know, just recently found Talk, and I was like, man, these guys are fantastic, like, I was,
if you heard the podcast, the Talk cast?
Yeah, sure, I've, and then they've been on my show recently, we sat there at, Suburban Pro, and, recorded there, so that was fun, and...
That's a good place to record a podcast, or...
Yeah.
What's Suburban Pro? What is that?
It's a really nice studio in North County.
Oh, okay.
My buddy Carter works out of there. He was in the band MERS.
Oh, okay.
The MERS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So we're I don't know. Where else? What else we got going on for the year?
I don't know, Mick. What else we got to offer the year?
Let's see. We talked about...
By the way, Mick Beauchamp is the owner of Foam Coffee and Beer. Is it called Foam Coffee and Beer now?
I dropped the coffee and beer.
It's just Foam now.
Yeah.
Cherokee and Jefferson, fine establishment.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Since we're on the subject, yeah. I'm a big fan.
It's a great place.
I really... the comedy shows, everything down there. Been, yeah. A lot of my friends are... A lot of them have been on the show, too, but I'm a big supporter of... local comedy as well, and but there's always a good show down
there. There's a great diversity of talent that rolls through there. I'm really happy to get to host so many various kinds of music and comedy and storytelling, and I'm open to just about anything. There's also been some, you know, weird performance art and avant-garde music shows, and it's a great place to be. I worked there for 4 years before I bought the joint a little over a year ago, and it's nice to be behind the reins now and being able to actualize the changes I wanted to see when I was the booker there. It's nice to have the freedom to create the venue that I want.
Yeah, man, making Matt Seller. You guys, you both have been kind of like co-booking that place.
Right. Just before I bought the joint, a couple of people were leaving, and the previous owner was going to have to hire somebody. I was like, hire Matt Studler. he's a good friend. I've worked with him as a booker of several other clubs in St. Louis, and his band Shitstorm is really rad. And he's been my right hand man over there with booking and promoting shows, and it's been a lot of fun working with him.
I've talked about it on the show with somebody a while back, but one of my favorite experiences over there was seeing Sean Patton over there a little while back. Mm-hmm. I saw Sean at Foam, mm-hmm. and then I saw him, three, 4 or 5 months, whatever, later at the Funny Bone, mm-hmm. and did a completely different set, you know, going from a bar, you know, kind of show to an actual club,
sure.
mm-hmm. kind of show. But that, at Foam, you know, the door right, the exit, or the entry, right there next to the stage, and he's going off doing something, like looking behind this curtain and doing all these kind of thing, and just kind of putting on this show, and then he like marches off the stage and out the door, and the door locked behind him, and like he stayed in character, and like he's like, you know, obviously all the windows there, you're looking out the window and you see Sean's like going down the street and screaming and marching and, you know, whatever, doing this whole thing, and everybody on the sidewalk's looking at him like he's some kind of madman. And then Sean walks in the back door of the venue and then walks right back up to the stage. You know,
was he holding a cordless mic or something? Yeah, I wasn't there for this one.
I think he might have left the mic, but he just, like, you know, on the stage or something like that. But yeah, it was just such a fun moment, like, just to be a part of that, because like the stuff, like, you know, I was kind of referring now, the club experience I've seen at the Funny Bone was a very different feel to that. You know, you only get that in a small bar show like that.
I'm also Cherokee too. It's like kind of the Wild West out here. It's like, in a good way. It's in a great way. I'm surprised anyone noticed anybody acting weird walking up and down Cherokee on the sidewalk. We had some characters.
Sure. Oh yeah.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah, but it was just, it was a lot of fun, and I'm so glad I was at that. Kevin White was at that show also, opening that show, and took his shirt off and was screaming at people. So, I mean, like, overall, like, the whole show was just a lot of fun experience. So, but yeah, like, I know. So, yeah, I've been down to Foam quite often as a fan. So,
it's the best place. When I got married, that's where I had my reception karaoke jam.
Yeah.
At Foam. Yeah. It was the best.
Yeah. I'd like to say it again, but yeah, congratulations on newlywed and everything.
Newly wedded.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Very exciting stuff, man.
For sure. It's going to be a good year.
Yeah. Well, guys, I guess we'll close this bad boy out. Thanks so much for hanging and taking some time out. And,
sure.
Before we totally close it out, though, you talked a lot about your video work, Brian, but you didn't mention Blip Blap.
Oh, it's called Blip Blap Video.
Yeah.
There you go.
If you guys want to make a video for your music band,
yeah, there you go.
Look me up, Blip Blap Video.
Yeah.
And, like, it sounds. foamvenue.com if you want to see what we're doing, if you want to check out the calendar or book a show.
For sure.
Right.
And again, you can see Woe Thunder February 5th at Off Broadway with Brother Lazaroff and the Foglights, and March 5th at Off Broadway with Dressy Bessie.
You got it.
And if you want to listen to some songs, those are Your album is available on Bandcamp and Spotify.
It's like Unusual DJ, iTunes, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's actually on Bandcamp still as a pay-as-you-want format. So we haven't changed that yet.
Sure. And you can get shirts through there also, right?
You can get shirts, yeah. Those you have to actually pay for.
Yeah.
And the CDs themselves you have to pay for. But if you want to just like get the record and download it, you can download it for free on there if you want to, if you're broke.
Yeah.
Do it. I'm just happy people are listening to the record.
I was going to ask like how... Because it feels like... I mean, there's so many mixed opinions on all, though. But I feel like... For the most part, a lot of local bands are just happy to get people listening to it.
Exactly.
You know, obviously, we want to get paid, you know, but more or less to stream or to have the MP3s or whatever, just to get the music out there, to get the exposure. And,
right.
Yeah, I like the pay what you want or pay what you can option on Bandcamp. Yeah.
I feel like that's a really good way to go.
So, it doesn't help anybody to alienate somebody by them not being able to afford however much you're asking for it.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me, though, like, they have their album kind of pay as you want or whatever it is, but they recommended to just take it for free because if you get it for free, it's free, right?
Right.
But if somebody paid $1, like, for the album, that whole dollar goes to, like, tax. So, like, and Bandcamp services and stuff. So, like, they got like, you know, 10 cents or whatever it was. So it's like you might as well just take it for free.
Oh yeah,
and
you'd be surprised how many people will actually pay more than $10,
right?
On that format when it's the pay as you want.
Yeah,
because there are a lot of people actually they do want to support if they hear something they like. They actually want to support it. But I'm always of the opinion like I would rather people get the record for free online if they only download music and they don't buy records. And then just come to shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to get people to come to shows. That's my main goal in St. Louis. Because St. Louis doesn't have enough people going to shows.
Sure.
The real trick is to reach people who are not a part of the music scene.
Yeah, that's
right
for sure.
Well, we can put some of these songs on there or whatever you want to do. But you have any suggestions or...
What do you think, Mick?
I don't know when this is going to air. It would be really rad to get the brand new track on there, but Everybody Keeps Moving is popular. What are the ones that...
Everybody Keeps Moving and Bottle Hands.
Bottle Hands, Bottle Hands was the first track that grabbed me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun one. I like it. And then I saw the Lo-Fi video.
The Lo-Fi video is funny because we were super excited to Bill let us do that. We love Bill Streeter and we love the Lo-Fi thing. But we had just got that bit lined up together.
Essentially, that was the impetus for like putting the band together.
Sure, we like rehearsed like the morning before that, or just because we didn't know that nobody really knew the song yet. It was like everyone was like excited.
I think we literally never played the song.
That was the first time we ever played
single
together. Yeah.
Band member there until we shot the video.
Yeah,
and we were also excited about it.
Sure,
that we kind of rushed it a little bit,
but it's super fun. It was a great time. But yeah, it's like
and.
It was. I'm glad we experienced that, though.
Sure. Yeah,
it was a good
lesson learned.
Good
bonding
moment.
Well, I'm up for whatever. I mean, if you guys want to put the new one on there,
just let me know when you're ready to post it, and I'll send it to you.
Yeah, if it's ready in time, it'll be there. Otherwise,
if not,
there's
just
plenty of stuff to draw.
Yeah.
Anything off the record's fine. Really.
All right. Well, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Thunder.
These are all things.
Yeah. These are all things.
Yeah. So reach out, tell them what you think.
We're on the internet.
Yeah.
If you've heard of that.
Right. All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Don't let them send you safely. Oh, here on the
People Podcast. Rock People Podcast. Rock People Podcast,
y'all. Hi, I'm Mick, and this is
Brian,
and you're listening to
Rock Paper Podcast. But we didn't say we were both under.
Oh.
Shit about Mick and Brian.
Alright.
Hi, this is Brian and
Mick
from Both Under, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Yes. What if we say it together?
Hey, I'm Bruno.
No. Hi, I'm Mick, and this is
Brian.
And we are
Both Under. You're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Booyah.
Thanks for not looking at porn for one freaking moment. Jesus, people.
You just alienated a lot of potential fans.
I love porn's a good thing. Porn serves a purpose. But, you know, you need a break from porn to look about local music scenes, right?
All right, intro done.
Done. Magic made.
Give me another drink.
Do you need another one that's not as stupid as that?
We could just do a kind of a standard.
Yes.
I'm Mick, you're Brian.
You're listening. Let's see if we're allowed. Yeah, let's do that. You said it. Go ahead.